The Germans had been pushing into Russia for a year during Operation Barbarossa, suffering around 750,000 casualties, while only about 200 of those died from gunshot wounds. In September of 1941, the Germans had finally reached Moscow and deployed the Worm Act in an attack known as Operation Typhoon. Three groups of panzer divisions attacked the Kalinin Front from the north of Moscow, Moscow Oblast to the south, and then another group directly attacked Moscow. The Soviets kept the German offensive at bay, holding them off with reinforcement armies and other defensive strategies. Instead of continuing the attack on Moscow, Hitler was advised by, well, his advisors, to move south, to Stalingrad, in what is referred to as a battle of egos, as Hitler thought that he should cripple Russia before taking the capital. After a series of skirmishes to the north of Stalingrad, the Worm Act, the German army, advanced towards Stalingrad, assisted by the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force. Initially, the Soviets lost 200,000 men, but stopped Germany from entering the city. However, by September, the Luftwaffe had control over the skies of Stalingrad, which was constantly being bombed. The Russians were running low on supplies, so the factory workers were told to fight the Germans, even though most of them didn't even have weapons. In order number 227, Stalin told the soldiers fighting at Stalingrad not a step back, implying that he should not retreat under any circumstances. After weeks of fighting for the city, Russia finally decided to send in reinforcements, as there were only 20,000 soldiers and 100 tanks left. Both sides positioned snipers on the rooftops of buildings throughout the city. As the reinforcements arrived, 300,000 Germans were trapped within the city. Unfortunately for Germany, it was the beginning of the Russian winter, and the Germans were not prepared. The Russians moved in and captured around 100,000 German soldiers. At last, there is no more Nazi presence in the city of Stalingrad, and the Russians put Germany on the defensive as they moved west. About 1.5 years later, the plans for Operation Overlord were taking effect. On the Western Front, the Allies were planning for an invasion of Normandy, which could be called the beginning of the end. In Dover, England, phantom armies were being built. Dover, you see, was right across the English Channel from Calais, France. It was the closest point from England to France and the most likely place for the Allies to begin their invasion. Inflatable tanks, fake military exercise, and bombings of Calais all gave the impression that this was the place to attack. Before D-Day, airborne divisions dropped behind enemy lines to confuse the defenders. Although these deployments did not go as planned as it was raining, the airborne divisions managed to take control of a few fortresses and cause general chaos behind the German lines. Furthermore, the Allies sent out bombers to bomb the coastal defenses to make the landings on the beaches safer for the infantry. However, it was still cloudy and the bombers flew too far inland, eventually unloading on farms. The Germans, still in confusion, began to deploy most of their Wehrmacht divisions to Calais, as that's where they were thought the Allies were coming from. By the time the first launch shuttles left the carriers, it was too late for the Germans to reposition to Normandy. However, Normandy was still heavily fortified by German machine gunners. The Canadian and British divisions landed at the northern beaches, codenamed Gold, Juno, and Sword. The Americans landed at Utah along with the U.S. codenamed along with the 1st Division at Omaha, where they encountered the best German division, 352nd. As soon as the launch shuttles landed, most of the occupants were riddled with gunfire and had to jump over the side of the boats. Robert Koop, a British soldier who landed at Sword, said that was a relief to get to the beaches. Robert said, quote, "I didn't care whether I got shot or not. I just wanted to get off of that landing craft and get my feet on the ground." Unquote. The operation at Omaha seemed as if it was going to fail, but through leadership and perseverance, the Allies pushed past the beaches. As the infantry pushed inland, they were almost halted by the 21st Panzer Corps, which tried to get between the British 3rd and the Canadian 3rd. However, fierce fighting from the British anti-tank gunners halted the panzers in the French town of Perrières-sur-Laidon. The beach had now been divided into three separate parts. The Canadians and the British held the land in between Cayenne and Bayeux, the U.S. 5th Corps holding Port Embassin and Saint-Pierre-du-Mont, and the U.S. 8th Corps holding the Vire River behind Utah Beach. Robert Koop, mentioned earlier, was a member of the British 59th, the division ordered to march up the middle of the Canadian 3rd and British 3rd in Cayenne. After 500 Lancaster bombers preluded the attack, the Allied divisions crossed no man's land and entered the city. They encountered the 1st and 12th Panzer Division and parts of the 21st Panzer Division, which, as mentioned earlier, was trying to halt the two countries' advancing forces. 100 men in Mr. Koop's division had set out, but only 18 were left by the time the battle was over. The Americans quickly closed the gap between the 5th and the 8th Corps behind Etaube, but it was not until June 12th that Americans defeated the Germans at Carentan that they finally joined into one group. As the Allies moved further southeast, they found it difficult to cross the vegetated lands of the Bocage. Reinforcements from England had finally arrived, but the Allies found it rather difficult to break past the German defenses after the British were defeated at Villers-Bocage. However, the Allies persisted, and after the last bastion had fallen in Cherbourg, and on June 28th, the Allies could finally secure the peninsula. The successful invasion had finally marked the beginning of the end of the Third Reich and the final stages of World War II.